but I felt like it was a cool way to share information without it feeling like, here's a fact sheet, coldy die back, spray your shoes, blah, 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 blah. Instead it was like, oh, what's that person doing? Why is that guy climbing in that tree? What's that about? So kind of just like a different way of sharing, I guess.
Hello everyone and welcome to Canon Conversations, the show where I sit down with some of the top creatives in the industry so that you can become a better photographer. On today's show, we're going to be diving into how we can make a difference with our photography. If you've got a cause you believe in, you know, something you feel passionate about and you want to and you think, how can I help through my photography? Today's episode is for you. And to walk us through a really awesome photo project that she's been working on recently, we have professional photographer Michelle Hislop. Michelle, thanks for joining me.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me here.
Awesome. For everyone at home, do you want to give us a bit of a, to start us off, a bit of a rundown on your history with photography and a bit of your background?
Yeah, sure. So I've been a photographer for about 15 years. I was a very creative child. I was kind of like painting and creating wearable art and entering colouring in competitions and that kind of thing. So I was really into physical like painting in my kind of like last year of school and did photography as well. And I actually got a really poor mark in photography that year, but I felt like there was something in it that I really liked. I finished school and I just did work experience, tried to get an apprenticeship as a sign writer, and they thought I wouldn't probably climb up ladders in the rain. So I didn't get the apprenticeship. And then I did work experience with a newspaper in Tauranga, where I'm from. And I was like, oh, this is it. I'm sold. Just absolutely loved it. And they had just bought digital cameras. So even though I'd trained on film cameras, the digital had just come in. So, you know, they gave me a backpack full of gear and I was able to just like roam around and play with it and learn about the lenses and hold things for them. So I think that's where I kind of, fell in love with it, I guess.
Mm, nice. And before we go, I guess, in depth on your project on the Coldy Dieback prevention, yep, specifically, do you want to give us a bit of a rundown on the kind of the broader spectrum of your professional photography?
Yeah, sure. So newspaper work and magazine work is kind of like the main stuff that I've done. And now things are changing a bit because a lot of the magazines that I used to work for have recently shut down. Mm-hmm. So I think the other kind of bread and butter work that I do is, like corporate headshots and photographing for businesses. And it's totally fine and it's not very difficult to do. And it means that I can spend my time doing projects that I want to do as well.
Mm. And how do you feel like that sort of broad range of your work has affected your photography rather than specializing in each? Because when I look at your photography, let's say you're more like photojournalist photography, like the Coldy Dieback, yeah, project, it's got a really crisp sort of polished look to it, which I feel can only like be, you know, that has to do something with your really formal, crisp, you know, portrait work that you do as well. That's got to be referencing back and forth there.
I think you've probably hit the nail on the head. It's almost like each area that I've spent a bit of time in, there's stuff that kind of crosses over between them. Mm. So there was a while there where I was photographing a lot of people inside their houses, showing the houses. And after that, I couldn't do any shots that didn't have perfectly vertical verticals. And it became just one of those extra things to have to look at. And I think as well with portrait work, I think a lot of it, you know, the lighting and stuff like that, it's really easy to learn and it's, you know, it can just become a bit of a standard thing. But to get someone to feel comfortable enough with you that they'll kind of look into the camera and you can tell it's something real and genuine. I think that is a skill that can be honed. And I think that's probably, I feel like people is the subject that I always love shooting. Even if there's a landscape, I kind of want to have a person somewhere in there. And I think it's that thing of a combination of building something together where it's not just me trying to get this thing. It's the two of us kind of collaborating to make a picture. And it's kind of nice because there's that challenge of not knowing what you're going to get, getting something and then putting their trust in you.
Absolutely. And on a previous episode, I talked with another photographer about exactly that, the kind of the soft skills of photography, you know, interacting with people and making that connection and that kind of like fast turnaround, you know, portrait work where you're having to like interact with people quickly. You know, that's definitely a way that you would have built up those soft skills to then bring them into your photojournalist work in order to connect with people quickly when it matters, you know, to go deeper with that sort of storytelling. And to kind of like transition now into your sort of more photo
work. Sorry.
All good. AirPods.
Why would you? Yeah, it just fell right out. I'm not used to it. Sorry,
can
you just finish that last bit of the sentence?
Yeah, no worries. I guess to transition now into your more photojournalistic work, with your project on the Cody dieback prevention specifically, how did that project come about? Was it an issue that you were familiar with beforehand?
Yeah, it was. I used to do a lot of trail running out in the Waitakere Ranges, so probably for 5 years before doing the project, that was the place that I'd go to a few times every week. And I had a community of friends and we'd meet up there on weekends and spend hours in the bush together. And so as soon as I started running there, you know, it was like there were signs and spray things and we would all talk about it as a group and be really careful. But then when the rahui and the closure came in, It was quite heartbreaking because it was kind of like, wow, this is our place. What are we going to do? Where are we going to go? And I guess as well, what I was finding was that there's a lot of people saying different things and having different ideas about it. Like, are the pig hunters spreading Koldi dieback themselves by going in there to get rid of pigs? They shouldn't be allowed to go in there. Or, you know, wondering what the scientists were doing and what had they thought of and what were they testing. And I did quite a bit of looking around online, and it seemed like at that time there wasn't very much information. The information was there was the same stuff that had been there for a few years, and it's understandable. It's a very complex, multifaceted issue. But I guess I just felt like, I really want to understand more. I want to know the different sides. I want to know who is affected by this, and so pretty much I saw that there was the Canon grant program was going, and I thought, actually, this would be a really cool thing to do. And I was very terrified at the thought of it as well, because it was a huge endeavor, and it's always scary doing something that you haven't done before. But I put together an application and I got it. So, that's what started it.
Yeah, nice. And let's talk sort of nuts and bolts now about the project itself. What was involved? Who was involved?
Yeah.
How long did it take? How did you sort of start to make those connections with the people?
Yeah, so I when I was kind of like deciding how I would do it, I actually did a full project brief for myself. So I wrote down the types of people that I would want to interview. I did interviews as well as photographs. And so I wanted to interview people in the area of Mātauranga Māori, which is using natural plants as remedies, you know, for Koldi dieback. I wanted to talk to scientists, volunteers, people that lived in the Waitakere Ranges and how it was affecting their life, local businesses, people that were recreationally using it otherwise and how it had affected them. So I wanted to get quite a broad spectrum of different types of people. And luckily, because of the bush running that I was doing, I already knew maybe 4 or 5 people that I felt like these would be cool people to interview, like Sarah Hillary, and that's Sir Edmund Hillary's daughter, is someone that I would run with. So I asked her if I could photograph her, because the Hillary Trail is named after her dad. So, you know, to get her perspective. And one of the other runners, he owned the Huya Cafe, probably still does own it, and talking about how, you know, that had affected his business, and a friend that had gotten into pest trapping as a way to help the situation. So I started with people that I knew, and then once I had a few images under my belt, I could show the next person who maybe I didn't know, this is what I've done so far, this is how I've done it. And it was a bit of a snowball. Once, you know, the bigger it got, the bigger it got. I ended up photographing about maybe 26 different people. And each of those people would be a full few hours of shooting, doing audio recording, interviewing. I drove up like way to the top of the North Island and down to Rotorua. So yeah, it was great. I spent about probably 8 months altogether on the photography part. Yeah.
Well, so it seemed like the kind of the story and stuff like developed over time. You're sort of like hunting out exactly, you know, sort of following your nose around, like talk to this person, sort of slowly figured out, honing in on the story you were going to tell. What was your sort of process of trying to figure that out, and was there any sort of like standout, like, yeah, like characters or stories that sort of led you down the way?
So many amazing stories. I think I was just talking nonstop about all the interesting people that I was meeting. I'd go along to all the kind of community meetings as well. And there was one that I went to, and a man named Kevin Prime spoke there, and he was explaining the use of karakia to protect the trees on his property. Mm-hmm. And after the meeting, I was really terrified, but went and talked to him, and I asked him if I could photograph him, and he said, oh, well, you know, I'm going back home tomorrow. I said, yeah, I could photograph you on your property with your Kauri. And he was amazing. We went up, my partner and I went up together, and we car camped on his land, and he took us around all these very special places, to a waterfall that is his kind of special waterfall, and taught us about even the reasons why different mountains are called what they are, stories that you'd never hear about otherwise. So I think that was when I photographed him, I was like, oh, we've got it. Like it was kind of early on, and I think it really gave me that confidence that this was going to be a very well-rounded story, a cross-section of all these different things. So yeah, I think he was very special. There were so many amazing people, but we'd be here for hours.
Yeah, but I think that's one of the key elements, though, right, is that if you want the voice of the project to have any kind of depth, it needs to go beyond simply your opinion and your voice saying what you've already got in your head. You need to go out there, talk to loads of different people, get loads of different perspectives, and eventually that bubbles down into something much more rich than just one person's opinion.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Well, I pretty much did it without my opinion at all. I let people explain their experiences in their own words. And then a friend of mine, Andrea, was very nice of her. She kind of took the quotes and the recordings that I'd made with them and made it into much better writing than I ever could have. So it was, and then each piece of writing that was finished with their quotes, I sent back to them, got them to check that it was still the same, like the right thing. This is what they were saying, changed any little bits that they wanted changed. So there's a lot of organization and collaboration and there was a lot involved in all of that. Mm. But I really wanted to do justice to everyone that I had photographed and make sure that I was telling their story in the way that felt right.
Mm. Can you talk a little bit about the how that collaborative process with working with like a different kind of creative, like a writer, how that affected the process compared to it being just you solo as a photographer on your own?
Well, I was the only, it really was me on my own because I was capturing all the audio, interviewing them, all of that. And then it was just pretty much we had the exhibition and I was thinking, I don't know how I'm going to get these into good captions. I'm not really sure what to do. So I just, I asked Andrea and so I think it was quite good because I would just say to her, look, this bit of audio from here to here, I felt like that was really meaningful or really important. Mm. So she'd make sure she got those key sections. And I'd even maybe say, this was the vibe I felt when I was there. And I think she nailed it.
Yeah.
She's far better at words, So yeah, I was lucky to have her help, definitely.
Yeah, nice. And in terms of how you approached the project and in terms of making sure it would resonate with people, because it's one thing for it to like feel good for you and for you to show it to your like close little circle and to go, yep, that's cool. How do you then sort of make sure it's going to resonate with a much wider audience and have much further reach?
Well, I don't know if at the beginning you do know if it will or not, but I guess I had a feeling that this was an important thing to tell, to dive into, to research, to share with the masses. I kind of felt like if I can't find out all this information that I really want to know, well, probably there's other people in the same boat. And it did seem like there's like a very tight circle of people who are all working in the area, but then there are also these kind of lapses in communication. So it was quite cool when we had the opening night of the exhibition. A lot of the people I'd photographed came along and then quite a few of them spoke, and there was this kind of way of people connecting, and it felt really special. It felt like it wasn't about me, and it was about these are all these people's stories. We had the exhibition publicly displayed outside under the trees of Albert Park, and it was quite interesting. People, I'd sometimes just kind of like watch and see what people would do when they walked through there, and people would stop and read the signs or maybe just look at a couple of photos, but I felt like it was a cool way to share information without it feeling like here's a fact sheet, Cody Dybeck, spray your shoes, blah 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 blah. Instead it was like, oh, what's that person doing, why is that guy climbing in that tree, what's that about? So kind of just like a different way of sharing, I guess. And maybe a feeling of empathy as well.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I want to transition into talking about now, and this is kind of what I consider like the meat of this conversation, is around like that idea of like, we're not scientists or like sort of conservationists, we're not like sort of like on the ground doing the work figuring out the science of things on how to actually fix the issue, but what role do you feel like photography and other kind of creative storytelling mediums play in situations like this?
I think it's quite cool. There are these people that have been doing this for years and years and years, and I don't think they, a lot of them, they don't get any recognition. No one in the media talks specifically to them. Even talking about what they do on a personal level and how it affects them as opposed to facts and figures, I feel like it's really interesting to know what they're doing, and validating as well that here they are pouring their heart and soul into, maybe researching something for years and years and years and years, and they don't even know what the result will be, but they just keep trying. So, I really commend them for the work that they do. And I guess as a storyteller, I'm privileged that I have kind of the means to share those stories. So it's, I feel really lucky to be able to do that.
Yeah. And I think it was going back to what you said earlier around how you watched people interact with the photos compared to how they would interact with a fact sheet of like, this is what you should and shouldn't do with, you know, to spread Kauri Die Back. People were kind of resonating with the people in the photographs and their stories and wanting to know more and stuff. So it's like, I guess it's a way of bringing people in and piquing their interest for a subject in a in a much softer way than just throwing facts in front of them.
I think that's pretty much it. It's like a different way of showing information, and I really wanted it to be available for anybody to see rather than inside a gallery, which can be quite exclusive. Even if it's a free one, I think there's a lot of people who maybe don't feel so comfortable. But if you're just walking through the park anyway and you see things, then it was a bit of an equalizer, I think. And my reasoning was to share information with the public. So I felt like it worked well.
Nice. Yeah. Cool. As we kind of round out the show now, in terms of the project, do you have any further plans with it, or is there anything similar on the horizon for you?
I was looking into turning the work into a book, but with the current financial kind of climate, I think that's probably not wise now. What I've done is I've just published all of the work on my website, and it's all available there. People can read about it, look at the photographs. So that's where you can get it at the moment. And I also, I'm definitely interested in exhibiting elsewhere. I'd quite like to take it up to like Northland area. It's quite a big process doing an outdoor exhibition in terms of getting permissions. That's something that I'm definitely keen on. But I feel like with the Kauri Die Back project, I kind of feel like right now I'm good with what I with the work that I did. It might be something that would be cool to kind of revisit in 5 years' time and kind of like catch up with some of those same people and see if the research has resulted in anything interesting and kind of do a bit of a catch up. I'm feeling okay on that one for now. I have just started a new personal project, but it's too early for me to talk about it. And I'm in that stage where it's still quite scary and new. I've written all my planning out of kind of what I'm thinking I want to do. And it's also like what we were talking about earlier, where the story, I still have to find the story, and I can only find that by interacting with people and getting their stories. So it's kind of like I've thrown out a few ideas, and once I start shooting and meeting these people, then I feel like I'll be able to talk about it better because I'll know what the story is.
But I guess in terms of, to obviously not talk specifics, but is there anything that you've learnt from the Kauri Die Back project that you will be taking into your next project?
Definitely. I've learned so much through it. I think something that I gained was the confidence that even if a project feels very scary at the beginning and you don't have all the answers for how it's going to work and how it's going to look, that's okay. Do as much research as you possibly can. I'm a real fan of, I just love researching anyway, but I'll try and... the subject that I'm going to be doing something on, I look for all kinds of areas of research. What have other photographers done? Are there any movies on it? What about like old posters and whatever? So I collect heaps of images, put together mood boards. I talk to a couple of people that I trust their opinion. I go, what do you think about this? How do you think that would work? What would be wrong with it? So I feel like the prep part is really, it's quite good because it helps to give you confidence, and there is a certain amount of confidence you need to have to just get your first shoot done. I've also learned how if you don't have all the people or at the beginning, it's okay, because once you've photographed a couple of people and met them, and then you can just say to them, hey, you know, do you know anybody else that might be keen or that this would suit? And pretty often they're keen to help you out. If they've had a good experience with you and they feel like you've represented them well, then they're going to be keen to, like, yeah, put you in touch with another friend or family member or someone who suits. So, I might just check my notes if that's okay.
Yeah, go for it.
Cool. I'll just read. Okay. So I feel like a really good question to ask yourself when you're doing a project like this is, what makes me feel frustrated? What feels like an injustice? Is there something, whether it's for the environment or people or, you know, maybe it's like someone who's being discriminated against. Like for me, these are things that I get really riled up and it keeps me up at night. And so often those types of things will just be kind of brewing away in my mind. And then it might come to a point where I'll go, I could actually see that how that could work as a photography project or an exhibition. And also I feel like I'm going to want to do that if I feel like there's something good that could come of doing it as an exhibition. So not taking those photos for me, but almost doing something for them, sharing their stories for them. I think it also means that in terms of the photographs, they're not always going to be like the most amazing photograph I've ever taken, but it's sharing a genuine moment of that person. I kind of feel like the story becomes more important than the photography. But if you can still take a pretty photo, awesome. Like, that always feels good as a photographer, eh? I'm just going to check this again.
And I guess to finish us off, I guess, in terms of any other advice for photographers around, if there are photographers who want their work to make an impact, what are some of the things that they can think about? And even in the idea around feeling certain on the idea that photography can make an impact, you know, like just the role of photography in issues like this.
Yeah. I think photography is very powerful. Sometimes when you see an image and it makes you feel a certain way, then you're going to actually consider more, what is that photographer trying to say, or what is the issue that we're seeing here? So I think it's crucial, and probably a combination of that and as well, like, you know, film, like moving photography. I think doing a bit of a combination, interviewing people, gathering audio, I think it's quite good these days if you can do a little bit more of a multimedia approach, because just straight photos, you know, you're going to probably put it on your social media, on your website. It's quite good to have those extra things to play with, and it helps to kind of bring your message in. Like the new projects that I'm going to be working on, I'm just gathering audio from them, but I want to set up a page where you can see the image and hear the person speaking as you go through their images. So, I think trying to think a little bit of what's an interesting way I could do it. How could I, if you're with someone or you're in a certain place for a while, it's like you might as well collect as much as you can, so you've got a bit more to play with afterwards. And what was your first question?
Oh, just around any tips for photographers who want their work to make an impact. And I think one of the sticking points is around what to focus on. What is the issue I'm going to, chase down? Because I think that's quite a roadblock for people. Do you have any advice for, you know, like especially like young creatives who kind of have this whole world laid out in front of them? There's lots of issues that feel like they could do with attention on, and how do you hone in on what's going to be your story to follow?
I mean, I guess thinking that you've got the rest of your life to do this helps it to feel like you don't have to just choose one issue and that's you forever. You know, if it's topical or if you feel like it's about to become topical, great. Even if it's something that hasn't done anything in the media yet, but you can see that, hey, this is an issue. Why has nobody talked about this? I think photograph stuff that you know in your community, because you're going to have those connections already. And then, you know, if you're starting from scratch, people are going to wonder a little bit maybe about your intentions. But if these are people in your community anyway, that's like half the job done. They're going to trust you a little bit more. I would say be very open with your reason for doing it. Tell them about you, who you are, give them your why, because if they understand that, then they're going to give you, you know, like that information, they'll open up. But I think, like, I'm always really clear. I'll say, look, this is a personal project. I'm not associated with, you know, I'm not getting paid to do this. It's not for the Herald. This is just, you know, this is just something I want to do, and this is why I want to do it. So, yeah, I think if you're a young person, like, it's so cool, you'll have access to all these people, even Facebook groups. I often try and find people on Facebook. If I can find a group that's associated with that specific issue, join that group, listen for a couple of weeks, get involved a little bit before you maybe put your post on there, and then just see who responds. Meet that person. Once you've got their trust, you know, then you're going to find it's easier. But I'd say just maybe if you're like, oh, I just don't know what to do, just find one thing in your community, do that. Then once you've done that project, you'll probably start noticing projects everywhere that you could do, and just one at a time.
Yeah. I really like that as a thing to focus on, your community, you know, to go back to what you were saying right at the beginning of the episode, and how you made your sort of progress through the Cody Dieback project, how you started with your community and then used those stories to get buy-in from people outside your community. You know, you start in with the trust that you already have, and then use what, you know, the stuff you create to build trust outside of that, and grow and go and go from there. So yeah, I think that's a fantastic piece of advice.
Oh, cool.
Awesome. Well, I think that's going to be a great place to finish up. Thank you so much, Michelle, for coming on the show. For anyone at home who's interested in reading more about Michelle's project and her work, we're going to have links below. And thanks so much. I had a great time chatting.
Yeah, I did too. Thank you, Ben. And thanks for, asking questions about it. It's always nice to talk about things that you've spent hours doing. So, I appreciate you. And even the questions, really well thought out. So thank you.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to do us. And we'll see you guys next time. See ya.
Awesome.